Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Sometimes these days, especially in the summer, it seems like food trucks are taking over the city. Baja Taco, Macon Jamaican, the Chicken and Rice Guys, the Cookie Monster, the Bacon Truck, there's even the Green Bean Mobile Cafe. But in terms of numbers of food trucks, Boston falls behind many other major cities. The food truck scene is much bigger in places like Portland, Oregon, and Austin, Texas, and Denver, and San Jose. A pair of sociology doctoral students from Northwestern University and the University of Michigan has studied factors that contribute to a great food truck city, things like weather and the cost of rent, and those doctoral students recently released their findings. That made us want to talk to a local food truck professional to get a sense of the on-the-ground reality of Boston's food truck scene. So we turned to James DeSabatino. He's founder and the so-called chief cheese griller at Roxy's Grilled Cheese, which was one of the first food trucks in Boston. Roxy's was also featured on the Food Network's Great Food Truck Race in 2011. And we started by asking him how he thinks the food truck scene is doing in Boston.
There have been a lot of strides in the last 3 years. When we first opened in 2011, or even going back before that, I would call the city, a college kid just wrapping up at Emerson. I was like, hey, I want to open a food truck. What do I do? And they would just give me a phone number to another department who would give me a phone number to another department who would give me a phone number to another department. And there wasn't any way to really figure out how to do it. So considering it took a lot of learning at the beginning, there have been a lot of strides on the sides of the government and people who are interested in opening businesses here.
And now the city has a dedicated food truck liaison.
Yeah, absolutely. They have a kind of a food truck committee from different members of government in the city that kind of vote on, you know, new spots, new locations, and new policies.
The food truck study we mentioned that recently came out said that it believes that food trucks help bridge the socioeconomic divide, you know, makes it easier for people to eat cheap food. But there was a story in the Globe just today about a little truck in Wellfleet where a salad is almost $8. That doesn't sound to me like it's bridging the socioeconomic divide.
In my experience, I haven't seen any evidence of it bridging any kind of socioeconomic divide. But, I mean, I think it introduces people to better food and more interesting food.
Better food?
I think so. I mean, you know, there's really interesting stuff out there. Like, if you look at a truck like Mei Mei, who's doing, like, Chinese-American fusion, you're not going to find a Chinese-American fusion fast food place in Copley Square. But, you know, they open, so it kind of opens your mind to a whole new type of food.
There's an impression, at least, and probably a reality, that many people want to go into food trucks because they think it'll be a cheap way and a fun way to make a living. Has your experience been that it is less expensive than opening a brick-and-mortar restaurant?
You know, it's less expensive. There's no question about that. But, I mean, your profit margins aren't going to necessarily be higher than opening a restaurant. A lot of people are attracted to the idea that they don't have to commit themselves to high rents. But the issue is that if you're opening a food truck in Boston, you're going to need a commissary and you're going to have to pay to be at these spots in the city. And when you're looking at your financials, you're going to realize that the amount of money you're spending to rent, you know, your commissary in these spots are going to be pretty similar to the percentage of rent you're paying in a restaurant.
So it may be less expensive to have a truck than a brick and mortar, but it is not inexpensive.
It's absolutely not inexpensive.
For people who are thinking about getting into this, give us some idea of the hoops you have to go through. What kind of permits do you pay for? What's the process of where you're parked every day?
After opening our new restaurant in Austin.
Brick and mortar.
We opened a brick and mortar restaurant. And that was kind of a cakewalk compared to opening up the first truck.
Really?
Yeah. There's a lot of permitting. And the challenge with the city is that, of course, permitting happens in two completely different sides of the city. So you go to City Hall, then you go to 1010 Mass Ave for the health department. But, you know, you have to get health, fire, you have to get a state license for being able to hawkers and peddlers license. Oh, man, they just keep going. You have a food truck permit, a food truck license, which I, you know, 3 years later, I'm still not sure what the difference is, but I know we need both and they're pretty expensive. And I could probably keep going, but those are definitely the five I know that I have to renew regularly.
On the cost issue, you've said before that you think it's more expensive to operate a food truck in Boston than in other cities where food trucks are really popular, like LA. What's the difference? Why is it more expensive here?
It's just the permitting challenges. Like, I know in LA that you don't have to pay to actually park anywhere besides a potential meter fee, whereas here you're paying monthly the Public Works Department to be able to reserve those spaces anywhere from $25 to $35 a day or up to $50. So, I mean, that tends to add up when you're just looking at, you're really renting about 100 square feet for 2 hours. It's not particularly incomparable to, you know, paying rent somewhere.
What happens in winter? Does business just really die off?
For us, winter usually drops off by about 50%.
Just because people don't want to venture out in the cold and stand in line?
Yeah, especially for like food we're doing. We have to cook food to order. We don't really have the, we're not able to just kind of throw something in a burrito and roll it up and give it to someone.
Which means they have to wait a little bit for the cheese to melt.
Yeah, they have to wait a few minutes. And that can be really challenging for people who don't want to wait outside for 5 minutes in 20 degree weather.
And is it a lottery that determines where you're parked on a daily or weekly or seasonal basis?
So there's basically three ways to operate a truck in the city. You can go through the city program, which is like on the sidewalk in a designated spot that the city creates. You can do through the Rose Kennedy Greenway downtown, which is a separate organization, or you can just find your own private space. As far as being on the public way for the city, that's determined by a lottery every January. So,
how many food trucks are there in Boston right now? Do you know the number?
I don't know the exact number. I think it's probably hovering around 70.
And are there enough spaces for all those trucks every day?
It depends on who you ask. For me, I think there's a challenge, like moving forward, the longevity and sustainability of this program. You have a lot of trucks coming in every year, but it's not equal to the amount of spaces that are created, which is causing trucks like myself to rely more on special events and catering and private space than being able to collaborate with the city.
So basically more demand by the trucks than the supply of spaces.
Absolutely.
And I'm guessing that there's a lot of people clamor for the same spots. Maybe everybody wants Dewey Square, another big hotspot.
Well, yeah. I mean, as far as the city program goes, downtown is very, very coveted. And unfortunately, most of the spots are not downtown.
Roxy's and many food truck companies have a real life on Twitter and a real personality on Twitter. How important is that to your business, your Twitter presence?
Well, I mean, when we first started, I started this with basically my savings that I had managed to scrape up at Emerson. I didn't even have money for a website. So every single move we made had to do with Twitter and Facebook. So that was the only way we could tell people what we were up to. So, I mean, it was critically important in the beginning, and it still remains important as far as being able to be transparent and show people what your business is all about.
And do you see social media, Twitter in particular, as a way to really express your personality and kind of
distinguish
yourself?
Yeah, I think it does. I think it's like it's kind of like a backstage pass to what you're doing. It allows people to see your every move, and it's really fun, too. It's a great way to start a conversation.
The Globe, the Boston Globe, did an analysis last year that found, and I thought this was quite surprising, that 41% of Boston's food trucks have been cited for food safety violations of some point, of some kind. Why do you think there's such a high percentage?
I just think there's a higher frequency as far as trucks being inspected. And also, there's a lot of things that can just go wrong accidentally for a moment or two in a food truck. For example, if your generator shuts down, which is basically the brain of the truck, something like dust can get caught in it, and it can turn off, and then it causes your sink to turn off for a minute. So you go and turn it back on. If a health inspector comes on at the time where your generator went down for that 2 minutes, it could be a violation. Granted, it's fixed almost immediately, but those are the type of things.
I read recently that Starbucks is one of the big chains that is venturing into the food truck business, basically a sort of a mobile presence, call it. I'm wondering how you feel when you see the big guys that already have such a major brick-and-mortar presence kind of nosing in on what you do.
You know, I started the food truck as a way to kind of create a brand and grow it into something that isn't necessarily food trucks, whereas a company like Starbucks, it's probably a smart move to do the opposite of that. It's taking something huge and making it a little more personal and a little bit more mobile. So it's interesting to go the reverse way of kind of a grassroots campaign, but hopefully it works for them. It seems kind of fun.
You mentioned that you recently opened a brick-and-mortar store in Alston, your very first one. Why did you decide to do that?
It just made sense as far as wanting to grow. Having food trucks is very – it's like having a child that never grows up. It's like it's constant maintenance, and it's very, very challenging. So to be able to have something stationary that's our own was really important. And also there's some economies of scale there as far as being able to do a lot of work out of the restaurant that can be done on the trucks as well.
And what do you want to see the city do to encourage food trucks even more? More of them, more people eating at them?
I mean, I think there's a couple challenges, especially with the size of the city. You know, Boston's not a huge city, and there's 60-something trucks. And it seems like almost any corner you turn around downtown or in Copley Square, you can kind of manage to walk into one.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
I think the challenge is going to be maybe some deregulation as far as allowing trucks to park in specific spaces that don't interfere with restaurants or local businesses, but maybe create a little bit more autonomy that allows trucks to kind of be a bit more flexible and find new revenue streams and introduce themselves to more people.
3 years into this, where's your energy level? I mean, in terms of how much work you put in and money you spend, you still glad you did it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm having more fun than I've ever had. Granted, like, it's a little bit more stressful now as you continue to grow.
James DeSabatino is founder and chief cheese griller at Roxy's Grilled Cheese. James, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.